Well, good evening and welcome to each of you in the name of Jesus. As Lester alluded to, it's a big topic. It's a serious topic, but I also think it's a topic that's close to the heart of God. And so as I was thinking about this coming up here last several weeks, a lot of thoughts went through my mind. One was, well, there's a lot of books that have been written about this topic. How do you distill anything into 45 minutes of an evening? So I don't have any illusions of covering it all. And as I would say, as Nathan Yoder from Free Union in Virginia shared, I listened to a message that he shared at the Perkins camp meetings back in 2009, I believe it was, on the heart of the Father, that I really was blessed by. He said he's not going to, in that particular sermon, he said he's not going to give any kind of magical formula or one catch-all thing, but it's more just going with the principles of the Word and going from there. This past weekend, I was realizing that our own family is at a little bit of a, seems like a transitional point. All of a sudden the thought hit me that this year half of our children will be teenagers, and that was kind of a startling recognition. But that is, I guess, to Lester's point, it goes by quickly, and appreciate what he shared. I've also often wished that we'd have more teaching or discussions, excuse me, on this subject, but I'll quickly admit that when you're the one speaking, then the spotlight shines pretty close, and then you realize your own limitations. But having said that, I also realize that because I believe it is a topic that is dear to the heart of God, we can't afford as a church or as a brotherhood to not talk about it. I had to think of what Stephen Brubaker was sharing about brotherhood and how we help each other, we encourage each other, we challenge each other towards higher goals, even if we haven't arrived there yet. And I've been blessed several times in the past by Brother Dwight's encouragement in the whole thing of goals. And sometimes we think, well, we're not going to reach our goals, okay, so what's the use in setting it? But Dwight has encouraged me several times to high goals are a good thing, and if we don't have any goals, then we're certainly not going to reach a higher ground. So thanks to you, Dwight, for your encouragement in the past along these lines. And I'd like to just encourage any of you, if there's things that have worked for you or have not worked for you, please share them. Be looking for your input as well. I guess another way of saying it was, as I was looking across the crowd, I see other dads that have been a dad longer than I have. But I was reminded as I was studying that there's really in any subject that we study in the Christian life, we don't wait to talk about them until we reach some nebulous level of accomplishment. That's not the point. The point is applying the truths of Scripture. And in our own need, in our own brokenness, in our own desire for more, then we strive together as a brotherhood. It's no surprise to any of us that the Christian home is under attack today. I think you look at husband and wife relationships, husband and wife roles, marriage itself and the redefining of marriage, the amount of respect or disrespect that children give to their parents in common society, just in a lot of different ways. It's the home has been under attack for a long time, and I think it's foundationally because, well, first of all, it was God's idea, and it's been his idea for a very long time. And so we can expect that the devil works against that. And when we, even in a broader societal sense, I think it's not hard to see how the family holds, just tends to hold things together. If families are doing well, society is going to do well. And that's in a broader sense, but that's also true in the church as well. So backing up to the beginning, and also to the beginning. When was the Christian home instituted? What do we look at as the beginning? It might be maybe an obvious question, but what is your feedback? Where does God first speak about that? Right, first chapters, very, very early on. Basically, you could say it's at the foundation of the world, really. Dwight, could you read Genesis 1, 26 to 28? And then, let's see, John, you read Genesis 2, 23 and 24. Very familiar, but just want to underscore the foundation. Whenever you're ready for it, go ahead. John.
Genesis 2, 23 and 24. Then the man said, "This one at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This one will be called woman, for she was taken out of man. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and unites with his wife, and they become a new family."
Okay. All right, thank you. So, obviously it's so basic that you think in a church you wouldn't have to reiterate it, but it's from the foundation of the world. One man, one woman for life, and children if God blesses with children. So simply put, God created, he designed, and he established the Christian home in Genesis. So extending from there, how early are we told to teach our children? What scriptures come to your mind that talk about teaching our children or have to do with that? Anyone, feel free to pop off either a verse or part of the verse or whatever comes to your mind.
Proverbs repeatedly says before it's too late.
Okay, Proverbs. There's one a book that I would recommend, and I just skimmed a few small sections of it, but Christian Family Living by John Koblenz was written from an Anabaptist perspective and is a good source. Incidentally, Brother David L. was one of the ones that proofread or read over the book before it was published. And they point out, John points out, Proverbs 10:1-5, "A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame." Any other scriptural references that come to your mind with talking about children and our relation to them? Excellent. That was also noted here. Okay. Okay. So that's it's not just your immediate family, it extends beyond to the next generation. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Excellent. Ephesians 6 is a very familiar one. Several verses there. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, and you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And we could continue on with those. Those are a few examples to look at. What are some biblical examples of godly families that come to your mind? Families that stand out to you as ones who did well in handling the faith and passing on the faith. Yes. Thought that we were, as Miriam and I were talking about a few days ago, she mentioned that as well, for Noah to take his sons on the ark with him meant that they obviously believed their father and were with him in it. Even after many years of building and many years of scoffing, he was able to take them on board, literally. Shane?
I just read that account recently again and was intrigued. I think I completely forgotten that things really deteriorated in their family situation later then. And as I was thinking about, you know, some of the heroes of faith and their families, one of the things that sticks out to me is that they lived kind of real lives, sort of like some of the rest of us do. And there were some highlight moments and some things that really didn't go well.
It's a good point. And I think it's important to recognize that even as we do the very best that we can, we have to hold the two components of God's grace and the components of our children's choice. If they do choose well and follow the Lord, then it really is God's grace that is channeled through. And if they don't, then we also have to recognize they have a choice to make. And sometimes I think even with the very best of teaching, a child can unfortunately go the wrong way. And that's a deep heartache. Okay, anyone else? As you think of, if you were to think of some core biblical values that either that you tried to teach in your own family, or that, and I also want to encourage any of you young people who are not married, it's not too soon to start having ideas and goals about what you want to see in your family, and to point out Dwight's encouragement again. It's good to have those goals, to have those ideas of what you think it should look like. I want to affirm you in doing that. But what core biblical values and guidelines come to your mind? Just spout off words or several words or a sentence or two that comes to your mind, and then we may or may not be able to discuss all of them, but just as a lead in here, what comes to your mind? What do you value in your own family? And what do you strive to teach?
The Bible says the joy of the Lord will be your strength. I think shaping your family to be able to appreciate the joy that is there is pretty important.
It's a good point, especially in a world of a lot of negativity and pessimism and society decaying around you. It's good. Who else?
A life of reliance on God, and that can be taught maybe as much by just practicing it.
Reliance on God. Good. Excellent. Anyone else? Orlin?
Two values that I idealize for myself and my family are the opportunity for gratitude and teachable spirit. A lot of things that will result from that, I believe, is that in contrast to what seems to be the reality of a lot of people around us, I think that will help us, help our children.
That's good. Excellent. Anyone else? Oh, thanks for that. Thanks for contributing that. That is helpful. Like I said, we don't have any illusion that we're gonna hit them all tonight. So, what I would like to be able to do is, and my hope is that we can go away with a shot in the arm that says, you know, by helping each other, by looking out for each other as a brotherhood, by lifting each other up in prayer, that we can. That we can build families that care about the Lord and that are, as Arlen said, are contributors not only to the church but also to society around us. The first one that I have written down, and I guess prior to that, I guess would be just kind of the understood is a reliance on God. Like Nathan was sharing, our walk with God obviously comes first, but that's not specifically what this is. That could be a topic in itself, obviously. But the first one I have for as far as raising a godly family is guard your marriage and marital communication. I think if our children see us love each other, see us communicate, I think it goes a long ways in that foundation for them. And I know the enemy would love to weaken our communication, to weaken our commitment to each other, because he knows it'll weaken the whole family structure then as well. So how do we fight against that? Just do you have things that you like to do as couples that work against that weakening another way of saying, I guess, would be a guard for you in your marriage and in your communication? What have you found to be a help and a blessing?
Well, this isn't answering your question exactly, but I remember many times when I was a little boy, we watched the big, we call them the big boys, the ones that were the youth groups. And I think a lot of our, that was a real encouragement. There were some that were very careful, and they seemed to be the ones that would speak to us. And I think we can really, I think our young folks have a lot to do with that.
Well, that speaks to the value of role models for our children. One of the, a big help in raising a godly family is older role models outside of the family that speak into their lives and affirm what you're trying to teach. Very good. Does anyone have anything to add to that, or to what you may do as couples to that are a help to you in guarding your marriage? A difficult thing, especially with a young family, especially that can be a challenge. I think just periodic date nights or weekends away, and that's part of what you're talking about, is time away. One of the things that, and this is, I didn't even think about this till now, but that was a blessing to us a number of years ago, before, or while Anya was still here, she was our regular babysitter for probably, I don't know, a year and a half. I don't remember exactly, where she came once a month and took care of the children. The children loved it. And then gave Miriam and I a chance to go out to eat and have some time to talk. And as the older the children get, the more difficult it is to speak above their heads, right? So it's helpful to get away, much as we love them. But that is, and I guess that's kind of a combination of what Perry was saying, and this is, that was the way that Anya was a blessing to us and gave us the chance. So maybe a way that some of you youth can be a blessing to families is to simply offer that occasionally too. And some of you do. I know that. We've been recipients of that as well. Another important part of that, in the part of the guarding your marriage, and this is probably more early on that this happens, but the whole idea of leaving and cleaving, I think, is an important part of starting a firm family foundation. And I'll just read two paragraphs that John Copeland writes in his book, Christian Family Living, about that. He says that one of the most painful problems in marriage is the problem of past relationships interfering with present loyalties. The most common example is where either husband or wife has parental ties which override loyalty to the marriage. The Bible describes marriage as leaving and cleaving. For husband or wife to join properly to one another, they must properly leave their parents. This does not mean forsaking parents in a hostile sort of way. It does mean that a husband finds in his wife what he once found in his mother, and that she gives to him the loyalty which she once gave to her parents. In giving sons and daughters in marriage, parents must learn to release their children while giving advice is proper, particularly when it is requested. Interference in decisions violates God's order. The interference may come through emotional pressure, bribery, or visiting too frequently. Whatever the distance in miles between two families, a proper distance must exist in loyalty so that there is a freedom in decision-making. I guess I encourage, especially to younger couples who are newly married, that is an important part of you establishing the foundation of your home. And like you said, it's not in a hostile way. It's the way God designed it to work well. Okay, anyone have anything else on that before we move on to the next? To the next one. And I will just mention with that, as talking about learning to release your children, with our children getting older, I think about that more than I used to. And I know that if I am going to be prepared to release my children, then I have to do that, have to start doing that now. So for whatever that's worth, that's easier said than done. And some of you who have been through that understand that far better than I do. Second one I have is, children should be seen as a gift, a treasure, and a blessing. And appreciated what Lester shared about that. He talked about that very thing. The world doesn't see it that way. It doesn't see children as being a gift and a treasure and a blessing. At least not in general, especially those who aren't believers. Not in the biblical sense of treasure and blessing anyway. More often it's nuisance or inconvenience or expense or similar negative connotations. And I think one of the times we show this, that they are that to us, is by simply taking time with them. And it is something that I have not done as well as I wish to have done. There was a time, a couple of years ago, where I started taking the children out one at a time for just a little bit of one-on-one, and that was something they really enjoyed, and it was a blessing to me as well. Then a year or two ago, over Christmas break, I took each one of them out for breakfast over the Christmas break between school semesters, and found that to be a real blessing. Like I said, I have not done that as much as I would like to, as much as I idealize, but that is a goal of mine. How else can we show genuine interest to our children, or show them they're a gift and a treasure and a blessing to us? Anyone have something that they've have done or have words they've found helpful in remembering that? Thought I saw a hand in the back, but may not have. Okay, Daryl?
I don't know how I'll do it when they're a little older, but it's pretty easy right now when I'm working and they're around to incorporate them to make it fun for them too. So if you're picking up sticks with a tarp, throw the little girls on the back and drag them across the ground, they get a kick out of that. That's the kind of thing, letting them be part of what's going on.
That's good. Anyone else? One of the things that I think militates against that is just our busy lives, our overcrowded lives, I should say. Miriam had a quote that she had gotten years ago from a friend, and so can't put a name to who penned these words, but I thought it said it well, and how that our lives being too crowded can militate against our children. And it goes this way. It says, crowded lives produce fatigue. Fatigue produces irritability. Irritability produces indifference. Indifference can be interpreted by the child as a lack of genuine affection and a sense of belonging. Children just don't fit into a to-do list very well. It takes time to be an effective parent when children are small. It takes time to introduce them to the good books. It takes time to fly kites and play ball and put together jigsaw puzzles. It takes time to listen once more to the skin-knee episode and talk about the bird with the broken wing. These are the building blocks of family life, held together with the mortar of love. It seldom materializes amidst busy timetables. It was just a conviction to me as well, in the kinds of things that I fill my schedule with. Do I have my priorities where they need to be? Next, I'd like to go to something that Nathan Yoder spoke of in that message that I was referencing at the Perkins Camp meetings a few years back. He was talking about the Father Heart of God and how we model that. And I was kind of, you know, Lester mentioned in the opening that it's a, you know, this whole subject is a serious subject. It's a big subject. And I think one of the reasons that it is because I've heard people say, and I believe it to be true as well, that our children's view of God is largely shaped by us as parents and especially by us as fathers. And to me, that's a sobering thing when I think about that. But as in this message that Nathan was bringing out, he was talking about the Jesus, the Good Shepherd, and drawing the parallels with the Good Shepherd and the sheep, and how he, as a Good Shepherd, has the best interests in mind for the sheep. He stands at the door protecting. He's on the lookout for danger. So there's quite a few parallels that we can draw. But before we get to more of that, I think this is one of the most foundational and primary things that we should look at when we're looking at raising our families is how we are modeling God's heart. So I found it helpful to ask, what is God's, you know, sometimes we're frustrated, our children don't listen, and or they don't do what they should do. And I think it's helpful for me anyway, what is God's response to me when I fail? And then how is that instructive to me in as I relate to my children? So feedback from you, what is God's response to us when we fail, when we drop the ball or what comes to your mind? Forgiving and loving, not harsh and condemning. So it's easy to say to your child, how many times have I told you this, and go down that track. But God doesn't stand over us in that way, does he?
Okay. Might depend on what the mistakes are, but he allows consequences to follow some mistakes in order for us to learn. Mm-hmm.
It's true. And sometimes the kindest thing we can do for our children is allow them to experience the consequences now while they're in our care so that they're more prepared for that later in life when real life hits. Anyone else? What is God's response to us when we fail? I think many of the main ones have been touched on. I had to think about just some of the basic truths about our Father God. One, and some of these have been mentioned, he loves us unconditionally. He chastens us as a father. His word doesn't change. He is still our Father and does not disown us when we fail him. And I thought the prodigal son parable, when he came back, when the son came back, the father went running, and that's a powerful picture. He is a gentle shepherd. So, as I was saying in Nathan's message, he was talking about Jesus being the shepherd and how that should instruct us as we teach our children. He talked about how the Jesus as the Good Shepherd is the perfect balance between law and compassion. And I thought that was an interesting. On the one side, the law, you know, we don't question or challenge Christ's authority. He is truth. He is the Word. Okay. But on the other side, Nathan was pointing out that he's a brother, and he is compassionate. And so he was talking about the how easy it is to, in our child training, to be, we either go all law or all compassion, or all law or rigid, overly rigid, or permissive, overly permissive. And he said most of us tend towards one side or the other. But he's talking about, you know, the fact that Christ is, he has that position, but he's also compassionate in that position. So, you know, as we look at that, as I look at that, I think about the God-given responsibility that I've been given as a dad in my home. That's something that I can't, you know, that I need to accept. That's the responsibility I need to take. But then on the other hand, I also need to have compassion and not be rigid in my law with my children. This is something that I jotted down that Nathan said, that I and quote the best I could copy it down, backing up the CD quite a few times. God has given you the responsibility of leadership in your home, and you must take it. It is a non-negotiable. By virtue of you being there as a father in your home, you are the leader in that home, and there is an aspect where, whether we like it or not, God has given that to us as a holy obligation. It cannot be shirked. It cannot be lawfully laid aside. It is there. And that was just helpful for me, because it's, you know, we look around us and we see a lot of these things. Do is just say, well, you know, you can do what you want. I'll do what I want. You do what you want. Or even as the children grow up, you know, it's hard to stay focused sometimes. But Nathan is calling here. This is saying, you know, we can't. It's a holy obligation. It's a mandate given to us. We can't lay it aside. We don't have a choice. So it's a sobering responsibility. And then out of that, obviously, we have to seek God's face in knowing how that should look in our families. We can't say, oh, I can't help who I am, or it's my upbringing. I can't do anything about that. My upbringing makes it impossible for me, or, you know, we're all broken people, so we all have to come to a place where we say, okay, I'm responsible where I'm at now. I can't change what was past, but I can move forward in the grace of God. And have God help me as I make decisions. And that's not to say that the things in the past that are difficult don't make a huge impact, but it's to say that we can't stay there. We have to move forward. What do you have to say? Anyone have anything to add to Jesus being a shepherd and us as fathers being a shepherd in our home, or anything along that line? Anyone have anything to add to that? Okay. The last number of points that I have, I don't know how much we'll get into each one of them, but just sort of bullet points that are important to us, important to all of us, I believe. The first one I have is learning obedience to God through obedience to parents, and not only parents, but, church and civil government, employers, etc. I think sometimes we hear children say in their when they're younger, you can't tell me what to do. You're not my dad, or you're not my mom. But the reality is that, and we do well to teach our children that it's not only the home where they'll bump up against an authority structure. It's everywhere in life. It's wherever they go. And I think we do well to help them learn that young. It's not just a necessary evil. It's actually a good and healthy thing in God's order to have a structure. The spirit of the age that Stephen Brubaker was talking about, he's talking about individualism, and I think that individualism militates against the whole idea of obedience and the whole idea of authority structures. because it's all about us. It's all about doing what I want. Another quote I'd like to read from John's book. He talks about this. He says, in this whole process, society has come not only to accept what to accept, but also to value the let me do as I please mentality. Words such as authority, rules, and obedience arouse negative connotations of harsh men and abused women and children. Equality, liberation, rights, and freedom of expression carry the day. It is ironic, however, that the society which scoffs at its rigid grandparents is actually producing more abusive family settings than ever before. This is not to say that the more authority shown, the better, but rather that the supposed freedom is many times nothing less than chaos. The family in Western society has suffered irreparable damage from the attacks on authority, the redefining of freedom, and resultant looseness. And I'll pause there. But the idea is that the world around us doesn't want to hear that it's an important thing, but it's a biblical principle that we want to incorporate into our families. Does anyone have any tips or maybe times when you did well or did not do well in showing or in helping your children learn obedience? What comes to your mind? I know I haven't given you a lot of warning on some of these, but if something comes to your mind, please feel free to share, because we're all made of the same stuff. We've all have had our successes and failures. Anyone have anything they'd like to add here? How do we help our children learn obedience to God through obedience to us and other authority structures? Okay, if not, that's fine. Move on to the next one, respect. Teaching respect for others, and towards others. Just another one of those things that I think, understanding that if everyone's made in God's image, it doesn't, just the fact that we're all made in God's image gives us inherent value and inherent worth. And out of that, it doesn't really matter what our people's ability levels are, what their status is, what their race is, what their whatever you want to put in the blank there, what their age is. We all have inherent value, not because of what we have done, but who God is and because He made us. One of the ways that you as the church have shown that to us is simply by taking a real interest in our daughter and her journey. That's something that means a lot to us. Okay, next, I have, yes, thank you. Fair question. Who has something they'd like to add to that? I can hear myself in what you're saying too, Orlin, because I have shut our children down when they've gone down that train as well. So I understand where you're coming from. Here. That's good. That's helpful. Because you're wanting something better, right? That's good. Nathan. That's good. That's helpful. I think that would speak to what you were saying, Stephen, too, because if you do that, you're going to have a hard time gossiping about someone. If you're going to pray about it yet too, then if your best interests are in mind, then prayer would be a natural result of that. And otherwise, yeah, that's helpful. I think they're somewhere in the mix too, especially depending on the age of our children. We have to give them a safe place to. I think Arlen's grappling with that too. How do we let them talk too when they need to about a situation? Remind of one of our children had a situation where they heard someone speak disrespectfully about for an extended period about. Different things, and it made that child feel bad. They needed to talk about it. They needed to talk about it with Miriam and I. And so, you know, when a child doesn't know what to do with it, then we want to be sensitive to listen to what, to help them sort it through. But then come out on the end of what you're where you're headed, Stephen. That you know that it ends up being. That we care about that person then on the other end. Levon?
This is not something we do very well, but just as things come up, if it doesn't mean affect the other, if it doesn't affect the children, then maybe a separate time will be helpful so that they don't have to carry
Speak to the one that's in, that's involved with it. Yeah. Well, it looks like we're out of time, which is fine. There's a lot more that could be covered, obviously, but I, like I said at the beginning, I want this to be a shot in the arm, so to speak, not a. We all recognize that we all have goals that we don't reach, and yet, as Dwight has encouraged me to continue striving for those high goals. And I also like to reiterate, especially with two things, to keep pressing on with hope and with courage, because the Christian family is, our families are important to God, and they are a light to the world around us. They're a light to, they're a testimony to the people around us. And then just to recap the whole idea of grace and children's choice. If our children do well, and if they follow the Lord, that really is God's grace. And if they haven't, then we also have to recognize that they have a choice to make. And we may have done all that we could have done. So in conclusion, I'd like to just call us back to the whole idea of patterning our parenting and our families after the Father heart of God, being a shepherd for our children, for our families, being a safe place, and holding, allowing our children to fail and experience consequence, but then lifting them back up and helping them move on, just like the Lord does with us.